to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, beautiful listeners. We are so glad you're back with us today because it's part two. Isabella Bird Bishop, amazing woman. Cheryl has dug deep in the research, and her story is remarkable, just remarkable.
It is. Please listen to part one. Yes. But you'll find out that Isabella was only 4'11". She was a sickly child. She was born in England. But she's already been on one adventure and felt so great on that adventure. Not physically feeling great, but she lost sight of herself and became so engrossed with the people she was meeting and the sights she was seeing. And she would communicate these in letters back to her family, who was in a place called Winton at the time. And she would communicate all these things that were going on. And by the time she got back, her sister had collected all those letters, shown them to a man named John.
Somebody.
John somebody. I know this really well.
Well, what we know is that the letters were made into a book. So here's Isabella in her mid-20s, and she's a published author.
John Murray.
John Murray it is.
Yes, John Murray.
And it met with success. This book was An English Woman in America.
That's right.
Which she had described everything on her travels. Mm-hmm. And it was just the beginning.
Right. So she came back from England. We talked about her father dying, which was really hard for her because she had so loved her father. So her mother had moved the family up to Scotland because they owned a little terrace house in Scotland. And Isabella took this time to go up to the Highlands, to the Hebrides, and to explore. And while she was there, she discovered these crofters. Now, I don't know how many of you know what a crofter was. I did not until I started reading these Scottish mysteries, and I learned all about what a crofter was. So a crofter is a farmer who farms rented land.
Uh-huh.
So he doesn't own the land. He is renting the land, and he farms it. So when she's going up there, she realizes that the landowners are gouging these poor men who are trying to farm the land, trying to support their families, and they're not making it. So she takes up the cause, and she begins to write articles on these crofters and what their plight was, and she sends them to John Murray. John Murray begins to publish these, and all of a sudden, the plight of these crofters becomes known. She had a knack for organization, so she begins to organize with those she met in America and Canada to allow these crofters to move to the U.S. and to Canada to buy their own farms.
Really?
And to become farmers.
Wow.
She's just amazing.
And this is all in Scotland, which has been
all in Scotland
for centuries, the plight of Scotland.
Right.
Trying to eke out a living and
right.
just
right.
being so difficult.
So in 1866, Isabella and Henrietta's mother died. Mm. Now, Henrietta is called Henny in all the letters. So if I call her Henny, you understand. But Henny spent her time contentedly convalescing in Scotland and sketching and painting watercolors and studying Greek. She came in third in her Greek class that she took. She loved Greek. But Isabella took another voyage to America. And on this voyage, again, she went to the same places that she had been before, but she didn't write about it. Now, she probably did write letters to Henny, but maybe because they were so akin to the other ones, and there was not enough to make a book out of. In 1872, at the age of 41, she left for Australia because doctors said, oh, if you go to Australia, it will improve your health. So she got to Australia. She hated Australia.
What kind of doctor would think that a journey like that?
I don't know. Such a long cruise. Well, she did well when she was on the water.
But
as long as she
well
was sailing.
Up in the
Hebrides.
Highlands in Scotland.
Right.
Yeah, that was her healthy place. Too.
Right. But
it's interesting.
And she did well on voyages. And maybe they thought, you need a really long, long, long voyage. And that's what she had, a very long, long voyage. So she wrote descriptive and very unflattering letters about the sites and the people in Australia. And in Australia, she said her symptoms worsened. from neuralgia, excruciating nervousness, exhaustion, inflamed eyes, sore throat, swollen glands. And she wrote this, I am such a miserable being. My back is better, but my head remains so bad. And I always feel so tired that I never wish to speak. I wish I cared more for people and did not feel used up by them. For people, one can always have. I like toil with occasional spurts of recreation. This is such an aimless life.
Oh, my.
So she also described Australia as prosaic or lacking poetry and a hideous country with hideous leafage. Like she didn't enjoy any of the plants, the botany of Australia at all. So she sailed from Australia to New Zealand. Now, you would think she would like New Zealand. No, it was summer and for them, which would be our winter.
Quite warm.
And she was so hot and she did not like it. So she boarded a boat in Auckland called the Nevada that was bound for California. And she described the voyage. Now, listen to this voyage, because what I'm going to tell you about this voyage and her reaction to it is astounding to me. The cabins were alive with rats.
Eey.
The food squirmed with ants and weevils and was served in a dining room, usually awash with spray from leaking decks above.
Oh.
And yet, Isabella said she became alive.
This woman.
On the voyage.
Wow.
It was almost like you needed these hardships and these difficulties, so she wasn't aware of herself. She loved the sea, and she said she was able to sleep through the night and sleep peacefully. This is a woman with insomnia. But in these conditions, she could sleep. The boat docked on its way to California in what was called the Sandwich Islands, which is actually
Hawaii.
Hawaii. And she docked there in January 1873. It was love at first sight. When they came into the harbor at Oahu, all these natives came out on their boat, and she describes in detail their size, their color, their foliage that they were wearing, their nakedness.
Their lack of clothing, yes.
Right. She did not leave out anything. She describes their boats and everything about these people, and she loved them. She referred to Hawaii as the nearest approach to paradise.
Well, it is.
Yes, there you go.
No argument with that.
Right. So she would spend the next 7 months there. She didn't want to leave. Now, at first, she stayed in the only hotel in Honolulu, but she said it was more like a spa. Like, they would serve just these incredible breakfasts with strawberries and pineapple and bananas and all these fruit. And she was like, do they grow these here? Are these natural? Are these imported? She wanted to live like the Hawaiians and the people lived in Hawaii. Right.
Come on. Let me pound the poi like everybody else.
Exactly. Oh, she describes poi in her book. You'll get that when you... Robin's actually...
I did. I finally got a copy of the book, and it's on its way coming to me. I keep a list of all the books of old Hawaii Nei I want to read, and this was one I couldn't find for a reasonable price, but... as Cheryl started doing this, I found one and ordered it, and I can't wait to read it.
Right, but she describes poi and eating poi, and she calls it, I can't remember, something mush, like white, tasteless mush. I can't remember exactly if that was, it's a better description than that, of course, because she was really good at this. So she moved from the extravagance of the hotel, and she stayed with different missionaries in Oahu.
Love that.
And from that time on, wherever she went, she always tried to stay with families and people who actually lived there. And she preferred later on in her travels to stay with people who were not necessarily from England or from America, but people from who were native to that land. So she went from there to Hilo. And I'm going really quickly because, again, she's like over a month in Oahu. But then she goes to Hilo, and she goes by a little boat to Hilo, not one of the big boats, but by canoe. She goes to Hilo, and there she's introduced to these pantaloon trousers because they offer her to go horseback riding. She's like, I can't. It hurts too much if I ride side saddle, which was very conventional at that time. They said, oh, you don't have to. Here's these here's these pantaloons that you could wear. And, you know, in Hawaii, we all wear them. Mm-hmm. So she puts these pantaloons under her skirts. And then they introduced her to a Mexican saddle, which was much more comfortable than an English saddle. This allowed her to ride without excruciating pain.
Because at 18, she had a tumor removed from
her
spine.
That's right.
Wow.
So she begins to ride all over Hawaii. She meets a man who agrees to take her to camp at the volcanoes. Now, it's just her and him, but she didn't consider herself anything to look at. She's, you know, 4'11". She's plump. And so she goes camping with this man, and they travel all the way up to Mauna Loa, and they camp on the edge of the volcano. She said it's because she went to look inside of the crater.
Yep.
It was 23 degrees, so it was cold, 23 degrees Fahrenheit. And she could only write a few lines because of the height. It was 13,650 feet above sea level because of the cold and the vertigo that she was experiencing. So she couldn't write that much there, but when she got down, she did. She was the first white woman to ever visit Mauna Kea and Mauna Loa.
Wow.
Both.
Wow.
So while in Hawaii, Isabella rode horses, she camped, she hiked, she interviewed, and she observed everything from the natives to the seafarers, the ill effects of alcohol, and how there were exploiters who were coming, the sailors, and giving alcohol to the women in order to seduce them, giving alcohol to the men to take their lands. She also watched the missionaries. She liked some, others she didn't care for, as well as the growth in industry of sugarcane. And she wrote about how the sugarcane was produced. She ate what the natives and the missionaries ate, and she wrote prolifically and descriptively of it all. While she's in Hawaii, there was a man named Mr. Wilson who pursued her and pursued her. In fact, she found herself trying to get away from Mr. Wilson, even going to the island of Kauai just to get away from Mr. Wilson.
I mean, let's remember, she's in her 40s. She's probably, what is going on?
That's right.
This is new and different.
Right. She's 42, and it's her first marriage proposal by Mr. Wilson.
Oh, Isabella.
But with grace and kindness, she was able to put him off. So she loved her freedom in Hawaii, and later she would write about her adventure in her book, which you just bought, 6 months in the Sandwich Islands, which is interesting because she was actually there 7 months, but she probably felt like only 6 months
were worth telling about.
Were worth telling because she didn't want to describe the hotel and the spa like.
That's right.
She wanted to describe.
Anybody can do that, but here's what nobody else does.
Here's what life is really like. Right. So she sailed from Hawaii to California aboard one of the Pacific Mail steamers called the Costa Rica. And she got off in San Francisco. She did describe San Francisco in detail, but it wasn't important to me because she was on her way to Colorado. And Colorado at that time, like Hawaii, was not yet one of the states of the United States of America. She had heard that the air was so fresh and so pure that people were recovering from whatever ailment they had in the Rockies of Colorado. So that's what she wanted to see, the Rockies.
And she's a Highland girl, so she wants to get up to those altitudes.
That's right. And she'd already climbed Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea. So she began her adventure in Greeley, Colorado. She had traveled there from San Francisco by train. Later, she would describe the Calistoga wagons and the prairie dogs that she saw in Colorado in detail. She also met the acquaintance of a famous outlaw named Comanche Bill.
Ooh.
Yep. And she traveled with him for a while and his bandits.
Of course she did.
And she baked bread from outdoor kilns, which she learned to do. She cleaned houses and barns. She hauled pails of water for livestock and families while living on the ranches with the families. She even helped round up, you know, cattle while she was there. She, I mean, here's this 4'11" woman who suffers from all sorts of ailments.
Yes.
But when she's in Colorado,
she's free. Yeah.
As she's riding astride the horse with her pantaloons, which she took everywhere she went after they were introduced to her in Hawaii. And she doesn't have to follow all the conventions that she learned in England. It was also in Colorado that she had what she described the great romance of her life. And you're not going to believe this man. He's an Irish man. He's an alcoholic. And his name is Jim Nugent. But he's called Rocky Mountain Jim. He was extremely handsome on one side of his face.
What happened to the other side of his face?
Well, let me describe the good side. The good side had blonde curls and one blue eye.
Sure. Okay.
And perfect skin. But the other side of his face was completely mauled with no eye.
Oh.
Completely mauled. And some said it was a bear attack. Some said it was a brawl. And nobody knows, because he never said, how he got that injury or lost his eye.
But when he came near, everyone knew, oh, yeah, that's Rocky Mountain Jim.
Rocky Mountain Jim. He was huge. They said he was a huge man, very muscular, very taut. And he was also very charming, extremely charming, and was known for all of his dalliances with many, many women. Isabella hired him to take her to the peaks of a place called Downer and Rogers, which would mean going up this place called Long Peak. And she wanted to see all of these places in the Rockies, as well as a place called, I think it was called Estes Canyon. And she wanted to see all these places, breathe in the air, and just take the view in. And nobody knew the Rockies like Jim. And so he was hired by Isabella. He could also be very surly and very disagreeable, but for Isabella, he was all charm. All charm. She saw the other side a couple times. It showed its true color in his interactions with others. He even pulled a gun on somebody in one of their hikes, and she saw that other side.
So two sides of his face and two sides of his personality.
Personality. That's right.
And that she wanted to get out and climb those mountains. My husband and I took the train from San Francisco to Denver. It's just the same tracks, I'm sure.
Wow, yes.
It's a fantastic train ride, and the beauty, you just sit by the window. I loved it because I was warm and cozy and I had a cup of tea and I'm looking out the windows at the Rockies.
Not those days.
Not
the trains in those days.
Out and climb those mountains.
But think about the trains in those days. I mean, they were rickety. Yes. Oh, can you imagine?
But she was not settled with just the view.
Nope.
She had to get out and smell the air and
yes. So Jim kept trying to win her over, kept trying to charm her. And he was taken, not with her looks, because it was said that she was a very plain-looking woman, again, overweight and short, but with her sense of adventure. Mm-hmm. She shared that with him. She was every much the adventurer that he was. She was also fearless. She wasn't afraid of snakes. She wasn't afraid of climbs or slippery places. At times, when they were hiking, he had to tether her to him, because the rocks were so slippery and the passes that they were climbing were so dangerous. But she was right there with him and not afraid, not afraid at all. And this made him fall deeply and desperately in love with her. She said she was strongly attracted to him. And again, it's just the two of them alone in the Rockies. But she restrained herself with a vengeance. Jim even asked her to marry him, and he promised that he would reform his ways. But she suggested they be lifelong friends instead. And when she made this suggestion to Jim, she said it looked like a wave of relief kind of passed over him, like, oh, good, I don't have to reform myself after all. But he said that he loved her and had never, ever, in all of his adventures and all of his dalliances, ever loved a woman like he loved Isabella. She wrote this about him. A man any woman might love, but no sane woman would ever marry. I love that quote.
Oh.
He gave her the gift of a revolver and taught her to shoot. And that revolver would be her constant companion on every adventure she would take from that time forward. While with Jim, she traveled on foot, on donkey, and on horse over 800 miles through the Rockies. Mm. Her letters to Henny about Colorado were first published in a magazine called The Leisure Hour, which was a magazine that Mr. Murray was involved in, then compiled in what became her most famous book, A Lady's Life in the Rocky Mountains. And she actually included quite a bit about Jim.
Yeah, I have read just some parts of that book, and her descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
She just absorbed it all.
She absorbed
tried to
it all.
Explain it the best she could.
Yeah, she would talk about the Native Americans in detail, mm-hmm. and about the way they lived, as well as their blankets, the houses that they had, mm-hmm. as well as how the bandits lived. I mean, can you imagine? It was so full of adventure. And people in England were curious about what a cowboy was and what Native Americans were like. But
that she could capture that time in history.
Right.
In such a remarkable way.
Yes. And captured Jim Nugent, too.
Yes.
So she would always refer to him as her dear desperado. After returning to Scotland, she found out that he had been shot in the head in a barroom brawl. But he lived. He lived.
Of course he did.
For quite a few months. And then one day he was doing something, and I guess the bullet shifted because they couldn't get the bullet out of his head. He just walked around with this bullet in his head. Some said it was two bullets. Some said it was one. And one day it shifted and he died.
Okay. Why has there not been a movie made of this story?
Well, the mauled face,
Wow. Yeah. Which side was he shot on is what we want to
know. I think Brad Pitt should play it. Well, just maul one part. You just have to wear one of those masks on one side.
Wow.
Back in Scotland, Isabella received her third marriage proposal. This time it was by a Dr. John Bishop. And this was a doctor who was renowned as a surgeon. He had the opposite temperament of Jim Nugent. He was reliable. He was well-educated. He was godly. He was altruistic, always thinking of others. He was stable, and he was kind. He was also quite a bit younger than Henrietta, who is approaching her 50s. She's in her 40s. He's in his 30s.
Henrietta, you mean?
Oh, sorry.
Isabella.
Isabella,
what?
Absolutely.
He switched sisters.
Yes.
No.
He was a surgeon, and he was in his 30s. But Henrietta and Isabella are both in their 40s by now.
But he had taken care of Henrietta because he was
had.
A surgeon. Yeah. So
yes. He had been her caretaker, and that was part of how Isabella met him, and he became Isabella's doctor also because Isabella and Henrietta had some of the same symptoms from the neurology and the insomnia and the back pain. So she had told him, I'm not quite ready to settle down. And she had set her heart and mind on an adventure to Japan. So when she was 47 years old, she took a boat to Japan. And what's interesting about Japan is at this point, it had not fully been opened up to the West.
Right. It's just what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. Wonder why that was such a call to her of all the other places in the world. And I was thinking that family connection to India, why wasn't that part of her earlier
mm-hmm.
draw?
Right.
Because she'd heard stories
from
the time she was very young.
And, they did say that part of her draw to these places was the fact that missionaries hadn't penetrated Japan.
Oh, interesting.
So she wanted to go to Japan and some of these places, she wanted to open it up to see and to be able to tell not only those who hadn't gone, but those who were considering what to see. And and her books actually became kind of travel guides.
Well, and also here's a woman going on her own to this place that was considered closed. Who else is going to come now?
Right.
Come on.
And that's another interesting point because she went to Australia by herself.
Mm-hmm.
She went to the Sandwich Islands. It was just her,
mm-hmm.
nobody else. And she was meeting all these people and making them her guides. When she went to the Rocky Mountains, she went by herself. When she was with the bandits, it was just Isabella.
Yeah.
When she was with the Native Americans, it was just Isabella. When she was with Jim Nugent, it was just Isabella. She wasn't one for crowds of people or lots of people. She liked more like the one-on-one adventures, just, by herself to see it, to talk to people. So in Tokyo, she gets to Tokyo. And again, she is forbidden from going into the interior, which she really wants to do. And again, Tokyo and Japan had just opened up some of those ports. So she made an appointment with the governor of Japan and went to him personally to get a license or a permission slip, so to speak, so she could go into the interior of Japan. So I'm going to have to stop there, but there is so much more.
No obstacles for our Isabella girl. She's
on her way.
Yeah.
She is on her way. So hopefully this next time we'll be able to finish up the story of Isabella and her adventures. But she is just such a wonderful character
she
and
is.
So worth knowing.
So captivating.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at WWK@CCCM.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.